don't download this, it will break your eye thing. That was the feedback.
Welcome to the Port Forward Podcast.
Podcast episode 13. This may break your eye thing. In this exciting episode, we're going to cover iOS Dev Camp 2011, some of the trends that we saw, such as GitHub, Ruby collaboration, some cool technology that we saw there, and
we're going to talk about our favorite Dev Camp app demonstrations. We also mentioned Google Plus, what we think about it, and then we cover some of the social networking phobias we may have had.
We'll also get a little bit back into Bitcoin rehashed, and Port Forward Podcast got Twitter. Everybody check us out. So let's get the show started.
Welcome to the Port Forward Podcast, episode number 13. Today is July 25th, 2011, and Ben, we have some listener feedback, as I understand it.
Yeah, this is our 13th episode, everybody.
Woo-hoo!
And it's pretty cool. It's like the 13th floor in a building, you know? Like, so a lot of buildings don't have that 13th floor.
So you're saying this podcast
doesn't exist? Or it doesn't exist?
Yes, the listener feedback, that's a good idea.
So we have Greg Holguin. I don't know how to pronounce your last name.
Holguin. Gwyn. G-U-I. Gwyn. I believe, Greg. Sorry about that if we butchered it. But it was... do we want to summarize that or just read the whole thing?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just basically going to say that he saw me on the Linux Action Show, which is technically TechSnap, but that's whatever. And he said that we had a good format. He said they were each 2 hours long and they're perfect for commutes in his car.
Nice.
I would also like to point out at this point that listening to podcasts in your car is a great idea. That's where I listen to all my podcasts. If you guys, you know, it just makes it a lot more pleasant to drive. And he talks about how he enjoys our show. We also have feedback from Daniel Johnson. And he is commenting again on the structure of the show. And he said it's already structured, which I don't understand. But we try. Mostly it's just our tangents. And if you're into video games, you should check out his blog, which is Daniel, danielj.se, spelled danielj.se. Nice. So I guess there's a J at the end. Check out his blog. Also, some feedback from Neil. He agrees that the show is also semi-structured and likes it. And he had a little bit of a comment. We were talking about Raid last week. Remember that, guys? Raid 0, mm-hmm. Raid 1.
Wait. No, not even a little bit, because it's been, I think, a while since we recorded the last show, right?
Yeah, it has been. We actually stayed out a week, and we went to iOS Dev Camp.
Nice. So that's good we only skipped a week. Sorry about that, all you listeners. I know you're like, damn, where's that next show? But hopefully you didn't have to wait too long.
Definitely. We all went there. A little bit of a side note, Merrick and I both went as actually attendees, and Sam came for the very end, and that's what we're going to talk about in this episode.
Sweet.
But before that epic event happened, we were talking about Raid 0 and Raid 1, and how Raid 1 is more redundant for your data, and Raid 0 is half as redundant, but it's a little bit faster. And he just was commenting on the fact that if you have backups with your Raid 0, like Merrick, you said you did, it's a lot better.
Yeah, but real quick back, Raid 0 is like no redundancy.
Yeah, nothing.
Not half as redundant. So yeah, you know.
Oh, it's a half. Yeah, you're right. It's no redundancy.
Raid 0 for speed, no redundancy. And then Raid 1, you have your data mirrored on the other drive. But there's obviously that doesn't protect you from anything that happens to the data on, you know, because whatever happens, if you get a virus, it's going to be on both drives, for instance. But
exactly. So, and there's no backups. Right. And that, yeah, I wanted to point that out myself, that backups are different than just having Raid.
So, and since it's still a quick little side note, Raid 1 is good, though, you know, because if you have a hardware failure, a drive dies, you still can keep on
going.
Gives
you uptime, really, is what it gives you, is uptime.
There you go. So,
yeah.
Pros and cons to both, and then always have a backup solution in place regardless of what Raid system you're running.
Viruses can get into all your Raid at the same time and screw
you
over.
And if you're really into the hardcore stuff, you want to have an off-site backup too, because even if you have all your super crazy system backed up a million ways in your house, and your house
burns down or earthquake,
nothing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Ben, did we already talk about we're using what's the name of that program with the C?
Not Cronus? What?
No, not Kryptonite. What is it called?
Carbonite.
Yeah. Oh, Carbonite. There it is.
Off-site backups of Carbonite. I never really came back to you guys on that, but I have subscribed to their service. You know, I'm paying them money, and I'm extremely happy. I haven't had to retrieve any files yet, but I looked at the retrieval method, and it works just fine.
How big is your backup with them so far?
Right now, it's like over a terabyte.
Nice.
And I don't. I'm not doing any network attached drives. Basically, I have an entire other server that, you know, doesn't have offsite backups. So I guess that sucks. But I mean, I could, you know, fully attach a network drive and back up all that data too. And they would let me. So I'm happy with them.
I thought that they had some limitation on MOV files or something to that effect. Was that another service?
That was actually Carbonite, right? So, you know, I got myself mixed up here. I haven't used it in a while. I am actually subscribed to
just a heads up, listeners, we're going to introduce two cool new concepts to our show. One is called the distraction depth. Right now we are at distraction depth 2, distraction level 2. And the other is fail depth, and we might talk about fail depth a little later, but it's pretty simple. If you fail and then you try to fix that, and then you're going deeper and you're doing something else and you're thinking you're making progress, and then that fails, that would be, for instance, a fail level depth 2. So right now we're at distraction depth 2, talking about the problem with log files on some backup service. So
the backup service is called Crash Plan, and there's no restrictions on data types, Sam. Crash Plan allows you to do network attached backups, which Carbonite does not. Does that put the lid on fail depth 2?
I've got some questions now. Are they both unlimited?
They're both unlimited, yes.
Nice, and they're low
crash
monthly.
Plan.
The monthly?
Yeah.
They're like I forget what it is.
$5
but it's
or something?
It's like $10. It's pretty cheap.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty good value, I think.
Since we're this deep, I want to take it one step further real quick and tell you about an article I read where this guy had a similar service, if not one of the ones we just mentioned, and he had a ton of hard drives, and he was into storing all his photos in RAW format with his crazy digital cameras and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he had terabytes and terabytes, and he started the service and he just wants all of it backed up, so he's got it all running. And then Comcast, his internet service provider, calls him and gives him a warning and says, "You've hit your 250 gig cap for this month. Be careful, blah blah blah." And he's like, "Are you sure? You know, I've got this backup thing." And he's like, "All right, whatever. You know, I'll meter it or whatever, so it's not, you know, backing up as much." And he hits it next month, and they just straight cut him off. That's it. You're grounded for a year from the internet. Can you believe that shit?
That's retarded.
Blew my mind when I read it. And you know, I hate Comcast a little more. I even commented that on my Google Plus feed,
which we'll talk about as well. Which is an awesome new
Google Plus coming up later.
Competitor to Facebook. Yes,
definitely. I like it. I like it a lot because it's Google. So back to the, let's see, listener feedback. No, distraction depth. We're not at fail level yet. We're distraction depth.
Okay, well, distraction depth 2 was crash plan, so we're done talking about crash plan. Distraction depth 1 was listener feedback.
Okay, good.
I guess.
So something like next, that. Yeah, go on.
Next we have Mike Shaw, who donated to the show, and then actually he donated to the show again, kind of because we had that break. So he's actually donated twice in 2 separate amounts, and that's very great. Thank you very much, Mike Shaw.
Definitely. Awesome.
Apparently, Mike Shaw is also recently just had his second child, so congratulations to you, Mike. That's awesome. Keep it up. Keep populating the world with nerds, little baby nerds. I know you
like
can do it.
Make sure they listen to the show. Put an iPod in the cradle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, we had a donation from Whitney. Apparently, girls listen to the show, which is cool.
Very cool. Skeptical, but cool.
Yeah, skeptical. Beyond that, I think we're done with listener feedback for this week.
Good news.
So, the main subject for this podcast is going to be iOS Dev Camp.
2011.
Yes, 2011. This is basically a hackathon where people get together and develop for Apple iOS. And maybe not all of you out there will be super happy with iPhones and iOS. You guys might be Android fans. But I really enjoy the native hardware acceleration that Apple iOS has. And the really smooth movements are available to you as a programmer. You know, they're not just on the home screen, right, Sam? Android's kind of jerky, right?
Oh, it's definitely jerky.
And so I just enjoy working on the iPhone hardware. I think they make really good hardware. So that's kind of my argument as to why you should use iOS. But basically, we're going to talk about the show. Merrick, you and I went there together, kind of. What was your experience?
I had a great time. It was my first iOS event at all, and it was my second sort of group programming type conference thing, or whatever you want to call it. There's probably a better way to say that. And just a real quick description of what iOS Dev Camp is. I've got their website up right now, which is, oddly enough, iPhonedevcamp.org. They changed the name for a few different reasons, but no big deal. If you Google it, you can find it. And the copy from their website reads, "iOS Dev Camp is a not-for-profit developer event for iOS, encouraging development using both the native SDK and web standards. The event format is a air quote, unconference air quote, or bar camp style, featuring content from the participants themselves." So that's what it says on their website, and it is a really cool thing. You get together, you know, with a bunch of like-minded people, and you hang out and, you know, just kind of bullshit and program, and you have a good time. It's kind of like this podcast with more people and a little bit less tomfoolery, if that makes any sense.
And there's a lot of good ideas flow through these events.
Definitely,
because people,
no.
If you kind of come up with an idea at this event, it's like open sourced, because you're going to have to tell someone because you're excited and you're in the area. So like if you invent a really cool service, if you're at this, you know, if you're at one of these camps, you're going to share it with people, and it's going to be more of like an open source thing, you know? It's really like a community driven.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't have to be open source, but there were, you know, obviously open source stuff, you know, programs there, and you know, there's lots of entrepreneurial types there, and you know, inventive, creative types, and you know, it's kind of, if you enjoy the show and you know, enjoy messing around with hardware or software, I would recommend, even if you're not a programmer, a coder at all, to go to one of these events. And it doesn't have to be an iOS, it could be any developer type event where, you know, you, as long as the fee's reasonable, I'm not recommending you go to WWDC if you're not into iOS, obviously, because I think that costs a retarded amount of money. But you know, these other little events they have, they're a great, you know, type of community event where you get to just hang out and, you know, be part of cool stuff. You can, if you have an idea, you could go to one of these events and bring together a little team of people to work on your idea, or you can go and just join up on a team and, you know, you end up hanging out. And for this, the specifics for this event, it was, I think, around $50, and you're supplied with all kinds of great food and snacks. A
couple meals, like two or three meals throughout the weekend.
Daily, yeah, daily, the whole weekend. And this was like Friday evening till Sunday afternoon, and then, or Sunday midday is when they started the presentations, and then, you know, they everyone who could was presenting what they built over the weekend, and I had a good time. I liked it.
So for those of you guys who live in other countries, it might be boring for us just to talk about this conference, because obviously you're not going to fly out for this conference. You know, it might be kind of distant from you. So what I want to focus on is I want to focus on the trends that we saw, because these are new things that are coming out kind of in the space, the environmental space of people's, you know, thoughts and the new apps, and basically just like the, I don't know, the idea space of new things that are happening. I want to talk about some of the new technology we saw, and then we'll talk about our favorite app that we saw in the demos.
However, there were satellite events that coincided with this event we were at. It looks like in Amsterdam, even though it says Amsterdam, Greece, Seattle, Canada, Miami, and then they have previous satellite events from the prior, you know, I assume, I think they've been doing this one version or another for like 5 or 6 years now, which is
right.
Cool.
Right.
So, you know, even though there may not be as many events or, you know, whatever, I'm sure you could find something like this in, you know, other countries that would be similar, which is cool.
All right, so let's start with some of the trends that we saw. One of the things that I thought was huge was people were starting to use GitHub a lot. Now, I've been classically trained as a subversion guy. That's just what I learned. And actually, I learned it myself, so no one really trained me. I just kind of came up to speed on it. But GitHub is really big. And so Git is a little bit different than subversion. One of the main benefits that I saw of Git, this is, of course, source control.
Yeah, we should talk about that real quick. Git and subversion being, you know, a source control system where if you make a change to a file and you save that file and you accidentally screw something up, you can click back in the history and see all the edits you've made back to, you know, the beginning of the source control of the file.
Each time you like a version that you have, you save it, and that becomes one of the restore points you can go back to in your little history. You kind of save a snapshots in time. It's not every single edit, but every time you click save.
Yeah, thank you.
Or commit.
Checking that. And I, you know, you actually introduced me to it, and I think we've touched on it, the topic, a little bit before in the podcast. But yeah, so back to you being a subversion guy.
So I've been a subversion guy, and subversion, basically the model is you just have one server and all your downloads are when you're needed them. So basically you get to the latest version and that's all you have on your computer. You don't have all of the previous commits. You have to go get them from the server. Usually, if you're always on the internet, that works great. You're just instantly on. Git is a little bit different. When you have Git, you download the entire history all at once. And the benefit of that is that it's using little differential, I don't know how it does it, but it's a differencing file system. Excuse me.
I was like, I wonder why you stopped talking, and then I'm like, oh, that's why. I was like trying to drink water all quiet too. While you did that, I almost spit all over myself. It's kind of funny.
So Git has all the different, it's a differencing file system, so it's not, it reduces the size, it compresses the size of the entire history, you know, as in it doesn't save a separate copy of every file. Just the differences. And when you download the entire history like that, you're able to have much faster interactions with the entire tree, because everything's local. But also, you're allowed to make little mini commits before you make your official commits back to the server. And the benefit of that is that if you're working on a really large feature, you can have, let's say, 10 steps for yourself on this feature that you're working on, and those just stay local on your system. And then when you're ready, okay, I'm done with the feature, you push them all up at once to the server so that other people that are working on the same thing get a more complete commit. And everybody was using GitHub. Like, every single project I saw, they were all using GitHub. And there's a difference between Git and GitHub.
Definitely.
GitHub is just a website. It's a service that's provided. So you go to www.github.com. I think that's how it's spelled. And
yeah.
You... allowed to put open source projects up online. So if I wanted to just make a new free account, I don't have to pay anything, and I can make a new app called, you know, iOS Dev Camp 2011 Ben Merrick Port4Podcast.c or whatever I want to call it. And so that's the difference between Git and GitHub. And everybody was using this website. It's a, I don't know, I guess I'm just maybe old, or maybe that's not even the right term, but...
Well, yeah. I kind of think the popularity of Git has increased since GitHub as a website and a service has proliferated. It's based on what you can see on their website, it is popular, and I... Without knowing, I kind of think the forking, when you fork something, that's when the project splits, right?
Correct
me if I'm wrong. So, and that is kind of a Git exclusive thing, right?
Or forking is done all throughout the Linux community.
Okay.
For instance, BSD would fork off of another kind of BSD, or certain Linuxes will be forking off of each other. I don't know any specific histories.
Gotcha.
But basically that means the project splits. So people get usually upset. Usually there's political things that are said. I want to do it one way, I'm going to do it this other way, and then you fork, which means that they basically take a copy of the source code and start pushing it in a different direction.
Go their own way. Okay.
And that
okay,
can be good. So, quick side note on that is that can be really good for the community, but it can also be really bad.
Because it fragments the force
right.
behind something.
And we should not be duplicating code. We should all be working together to have a better open source, you know, universe of
peace
source code.
Peace and harmony.
No, it's really true, man.
I know what you're saying. I totally know what you're saying.
And, you know... We should come together as developers and not be fragmented. But, you know, sometimes forking has to happen, and sometimes really good things can come out of forks.
That's cool. I wanted to clarify, because I've heard the expression a bunch before, and I've never forked anything myself, but I've definitely, you know, I even saw a t-shirt that said fork you once, and I was like,
Yeah, I saw that there, too. It's like a fork bomb. Remember those fork bombs, Sam?
Oh, yeah. That was kind of crazy, too. We were talking about that. But anyway, before we go to Distraction Depth 2, let's just take a step back. All right, so GitHub's cool. Git is more popular than you realize, or we realize.
Than I realize. I mean, I guess I just don't connect with other people as much as I did at this,
Which is why these developer
hackathon.
Events are cool, and we recommend them to anyone, whether you're a coder or not. So they're awesome.
Another trend that Merrick and I have seen recently is Ruby is up and coming. And I wasn't able to actually get Ruby installed. I tried a couple different times. But basically, Ruby as a server language is people are using it more and more, I guess because of the scalability is what I've heard is really good for it.
Yeah, we've been doing an impromptu, you know, survey of people because I've been wondering about PHP. I'm trying to build a cool web service entirely off PHP, and I've been curious, you know, about who uses what and why, and we talked to a few people at iOS Dev Camp about, you know, what they're working on and, you know, what code structure they're using, and we got like 4 or 5 Rubies to 1 or 2 PHPs, and I'm like,
Yeah, it's getting interesting. So new technology. Well, we saw some. What did we see? We saw Overlay. I didn't really get really into it, but they had augmented reality there. Sam, did you see any of that?
The Qualcomm thing.
Yeah,
I really wanted to see that, but I only saw the thing afterwards. Let me distraction level one that real quick. You mentioned that iOS devices are all hardware accelerated?
Yes.
Do you know if that includes the original iPhone and iPhone 3G?
I don't actually know the entire specifics. I was a little bit making that up when I was talking about that. But they either they assembly optimize or they hardware accelerate lots and lots of transitions. So basically, they probably write it in assembly, a lot of the things that they do. So the Xcode is the IDE that you're using, and I guess the language is Cocoa. It's Objective-C. And I think Cocoa is the library that Apple wrote on top of it. So Cocoa is all the functions you're calling to make new controls and buttons and sliders and stuff. And just that set of code, the Cocoa stuff, is really well optimized for the device. It's not like Android where you've got all this fragmentation, right, Sam?
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, because there's some Android devices are super slow, and other ones are faster, and, you know, they're all running the same, more or less the same operating system revision. So it's like they obviously have to be sort of jerky. They can't all be smooth. It's not going to work, right?
Well, distraction level number two on this is that Android is actually running the Java VM, basically the Java virtual machine on all of the phones.
What?
So because the code is executing in Java, Java is basically, it's half compiled when you first build your code. So it's compiled half of the way. And then when it gets to runtime, right, it's interpreted, which is kind of like compiling it the rest of the way. So because it's an interpreted language, there's kind of like a layer in between the hardware and the Java. such that you can run programs from anything that were written on Java on multiple CPUs, on multiple OSs, things like that. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Sam.
So without knowing, I kind of assume they set this up because they knew this was going to be run on a shitload of different hardware, right?
Exactly. Right. So basically, if you want to bring a new hardware, if you want to bring Java to new hardware, all you have to do is you just have to write Java in assembly. You don't have to write a million different apps. You just write the Java language in assembly, and then everything else runs on top of Java. So now you've built the platform, and you can run apps from all over the place.
Gotcha. So that makes sense.
So Java's tagline was called, write once, run anywhere. And people make a joke about it. I don't quite know what the joke is, but it's something like write once, run once, or something like that. Like, in the end, it doesn't help you out that much.
But what? Back to what you're saying, Sam, it does make sense that, you know, on older hardware, it's going to run like shit. On a newer hardware, it'll be smooth and fast and, you know, so on and so forth. And I, you know, I assume there's a lot of that going on in Android, not that I have any experience, but if you pay attention, that does actually happen on iOS devices too. I was extremely happy with the 3GS's performance as far as software and hardware was concerned. It seemed to me that everything just meshed great. Everything was fast, and, you know, I hardly ever crashed the thing, and it would hardly ever slow down. And for whatever reason, there's been bloat or whatever, you know, cruft introduced into the code, I have to assume, because on my iPhone 4 with its, you know, even faster hardware, I tend to have it slow down on me quite frequently when I do certain, you know, switches, like from mapping to messaging and, you know, back and forth. I'll type some shit in fast and I'll be like, wait, it hasn't shown up on screen yet. And that's, you know, kind of like to me after having it work so well in the 3GS. So, just wanted to say
a
that.
A lot of the firmware, as I understand it, has iPad stuff that's on the iPhone. You know, it's just a lot of it.
It's,
you know,
one,
it's like,
they build it once and it runs in both places.
Yeah, right, iOS. So, I got you.
So that's, you know, that's taking up space. That's like when you execute, when you run something, like when I hit the Maps app, for example, it probably checks stuff like, is this an iPad? If not, then run it this other way.
Yeah, I got you. No, that makes sense. And, you know, it's, I guess all I can say is that it's unfortunate. And I'm still glad. I will admit I'm kind of an Apple fanboy, and it has to do more with the form factor and the physical device to me than the software, although I do like it when software works and works well. But I'm kind of a fan of, you know, the high-end design, the sexy, sleek lines of your Apple products. You know, it's
more distraction, depth level.
To me. Yeah, we're at level 3.5 right now, I think.
All right, I'm ready to go back to the top.
Let's do it. What even got us? Where were we? I have no clue.
It's my fault. Don't worry about it.
No, it's fine. It's, as long as we can roughly keep count, I don't care how deep we go or how often it happens. I just like to keep a record.
Yeah, well, we always have the show notes to revert back to.
Good call.
So we were talking about new technology, which was the category for iOS DevCamp.
Nice.
And one of the things that we saw was these kids had put together a Lego Mindstorm device, which is like a little toy that Lego makes, and they connected it to Bluetooth via the laptop, and then they connected to the laptop again via Bluetooth on the iOS, on their iPods. And they were using the accelerometer in the iPhone to control the little robot. Wasn't that cool, Merrick?
It was. When I first saw them out in the halls messing around, I was like, oh, that's cool. And I actually didn't know what the platform was. You credited the Lego Mindstorm, which is cool, because I was curious about that. Not enough to look or ask or anything. I was too busy, like, eating junk food and hanging out with you guys. But I was curious what they were going to do and how their app was going to turn out. And, well, you know, they ended up presenting, and what it was a tug-of-war. And it was, you know, really cool. It was actually better than I thought they were going to do. I thought they're going to come up with some kind of remote control, maybe even like have a camera on it sending video back, which I thought, you know, would be kind of cool. But how, you know, they ended up building their app and they could have as many, well, you know, iOS devices as you want, and two teams on either side of this little robot on the ground, all wirelessly, and everyone would start pulling on their iOS devices, their iPhones, and they'd be like, you know, air.
Like a circular motion, basically, like you're pulling a rope, like as if you're going hand over hand on a rope or something.
So it was like a virtual tug of war with this little robot, and whichever team would pull faster, I assume, or cover more distance, the robot would kind of move towards them. And they even did a demo on stage, and, you know, it was
ended up
cool
winning
thing.
A bunch of Nerf guns for that, or they won something. They won an award for that.
Yeah, no, it was as far as I know, out of all the people who presented, even though I didn't see all of it, you guys might have to let me know about this. It was the only team that interacted with some, you know, actual hardware on stage. It was, you know, kind of like a physical demonstration, as opposed to...
Yeah, it was the only hardware that I saw.
Yeah, cool. So props to them for doing that. That was pretty cool. And I was also kind of impressed with the... you mentioned the augmented reality earlier. I don't remember the name. Let's see if I can pull it up real quick. But it was the, you know, where they were dragging the video around and he, you know, was flipping between images and video feeds and, you know, pointing stuff out with this other person he was having a conversation with.
They were doing a mock Back to the Future.
Yeah,
one of the guy was Doc Brown and then the other guy was Marty, and he was like, "Marty, we need to fix the time machine, the DeLorean."
DeLorean's
like,
missing Mr. Fusion or whatever it was. Yeah, yeah.
It was hilarious.
They had this whole Back to the Future skit, and that was pretty cool because they must have practiced it a little bit because they did it pretty well.
It must
well.
Have been in the hall somewhere. It would have been hilarious to watch this.
Totally. They did a good job both at presenting and their app, the product they put together was rather impressive too.
Some technology, I don't remember the name of the company, but they would allow you to draw a circle on the iPad, and then you would see that in a browser. You'd see the base image, and then the person had drawn a circle around whatever, and those bits would pop up in the browser. So it was like a teaching tool where like a teacher could, you know, be on their computer, and then the students could be on the iPad, and you could like point at images and draw, and the kids could like, you know, basically point certain spots out. And they had a video feed under it. They had webcams in the city. It was in San Jose, so they had a webcam in San Jose City pull up on this display, on this demo, and they were drawing stuff on it. So it was pretty cool how they were switching video streams and all these different streams out under, and then they were all allowed to annotate on top of it, basically. Right?
I was definitely impressed with their demo, and I'm curious to know if they built that all that weekend or not, because if they did, that just is awesome. And the category they won was called Best Performance, and the name of their product is Foresight, like the number 4 and then site, S-I-G-H-T, and they are linked to the iOS DevCamp site, and their address is SiriusApps.com. Sirius, is that spelled right? Yeah, apps.com. The product is Foresight, and they have it listed as the ultimate remote inspection tool, and it's pretty cool, you know, to switch between video feeds and pictures and then draw on the screen and, you know, point out to someone, you know, what's going on, and I was impressed with that.
So, a previous topic we were talking about with some of the trends that we saw, which was GitHub and Ruby, another trend that I saw was collaboration. A lot of the apps were like social connecting apps. And when I, you know, my app, which we haven't even touched on yet, was totally the opposite of that. But a lot of people were coming together in groups and they were saying, how can we connect multiple things? How can we make people interact with each other in a way that's never been done before? And that was like a really cool trend to see. The fact that everyone has the same device with the same accelerometers, the same cameras, and whatever, what can we do together that's cool or new? You know what I mean?
No, I definitely do. And I, not to disparage your app at all, but I was, you know, impressed with, you know, some of the effort that people put into these things. Whereas your app was like, what category do you think no one's really going to work on? All right, we should do one of those.
Strategic move.
But hey, you won, and we're awesome for that. Not that, you know, I only put a little bit of effort into it, but is it that time yet, or do we want to...
Well, we could do favorite app, or we could talk about mine, whichever you want.
Okay, let's keep going on the list here, then.
Okay, so my favorite app was I don't remember the name of the presenter, but they had a globe on the iPad, and you could touch and move and zoom in and zoom out on this globe. It was, like, rendered, I guess.
Was that Whirly Glow? Whirly something?
It was Whirly something, yeah. And, Whirly Glow.
Whirly Graph.
Yeah, Whirly Graph.
The category they ended up winning was Best International, and their website is complicated, but they are also linked off of the iOS DevCamp site.
And so they had a view of the world, and you could touch on individual countries, and their outline would highlight. And I noticed that continued to move and rotate the globe with these highlights activated, that the highlight tracked exactly to the globe. I've seen some situations where you'll move the globe and the highlights are off a little bit by pixels, or also you can see there's a little bit of a rounding error. So as you move, like very slow movements, the line will kind of jitter a little bit because it's not perfectly, you know, mapped down to that surface. But this app was very strongly, it was like they were drawing on that same texture. It was very cool.
It was cool. I actually kind of forgot about it until you mentioned it. Now looking on their side, I totally remember it. And it looks, you know, like a Google Earth product, and, you know, you can flip through the different categories they had, whether it was, you know...
Well, yeah, yeah. So the idea is you touch on the different countries. So I touch on, let's say I touch on United States and I touch on China. And then I say barrels of oil consumption. And you basically had like a map and you could pull up that statistic. And what would happen would be basically a vertical stack of data. It was basically just like a bar graph, but a vertical thing would come out of each country, which would show you, you know, in comparison, how much of barrels per oil, you know, you consume per day or whatever. And so you could basically touch any statistic, like child mortality rates. You could touch on, you know, anything that's globally available for the different nations in this planet, and you could see the data compared for multiple, you know, not just two countries, but like all the countries in the world that you wanted to select. It was pretty epic.
It was very cool. They even have, I don't know if they mention their data source or not, but it kind of reminded me of the CIA World Factbook, which is a pretty amazing site if you've never been there before. I don't know what the address is off the top of my head. It has a lot of that data, and then I'm sure if we slog through their site, we could find where their source was. And instead of, you mentioned it was like a bar graph, but it actually is the shape of the country. This a geometric shape of the country would rise.
Would lift out, and then as you rotate it, you could see
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
It was very cool.
Definitely.
So that was my favorite app. What about you, Sam?
My favorite was My Bank, mostly just because I enjoyed the user interface of it so much, which actually won Best User Interface. I wasn't surprised. It just looks so polished and finished that it kind of reminded me of that's how, you know, what you should sort of strive for when you're making an app, have it have that finished look. There was a lot of apps that were really interesting and creative and useful, but when they don't have that finished look, it's like you can't imagine it being ready for sale yet or, you know, approachable. So
remind me real quick, did I miss that one, or am I forgetting? I might have missed that one.
I think
one.
We walked out the room.
I think
at that
you guys
point.
Left.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Gotcha. My bad. I'm fired for so, that.
Sam, tell us about what it was.
But the UI is super slick. It's the woman who made it, she said it was supposed to be an app to teach kids about finance early on, something to that effect. So you're supposed to be able to like click and drag coins between and put it towards different goals, and you know, it sounded like it was really fleshed out and like and developed. And so everything that she clicked, you know, had like animations and colors and the whole theme, and it's really cool to see something, you know, with that kind of that level of finish on it. So
cool. Merrick, what was your favorite app?
I'm gonna have to go with Real Money Slots. That's the one that impressed me the most. Just because I don't know that I had a favorite. I had an awesome time at the event, and you know, I'm a little disappointed I had to cut out. I left, I think, about halfway through the presentations, but if it's time, I think we could talk about yours now.
Okay, so when I got to the, I'll talk about my experience. When I got to iOS Dev Camp, I'd never been there. My eyes like opened up. I was like, whoa, this place is so cool. One thing that sucked was that they didn't open at 24 hours, so I couldn't stay past 12.
They did. They did shut it down at midnight. And in contrast to the one other developer event I've been to, we were allowed to stay all night at this other event I'd been to, which was like the first night I think I slept like 5 hours, and then the second night, that you know, the night before you present or the night before the contest, we just went all night long, which is pretty crazy. As opposed to iOS Dev Camp, where they did shut it down at midnight.
You know, to be fair, that's probably why it was only $50, because they shut it down. But that's irregardless.
Well, it was a good deal either way, you know, on that random tangent.
So I show up, and I meet this team, and they were kind of some of your friends, I guess, or friends of your friends. And they wanted to do an application using, it's called GameKit SDK. And GameKit is something that iPhone provides that allows you to do very easy connectivity. So if you install like the demo, just the basic template, right, Sam, for GameKit, and launch it, what it lets you do is you have different devices in the same room. They can see each other on Bluetooth, and you just punch the button, and they automatically connect. And this one had a little Pong game where you were playing Pong basically against your little friend just using the accelerometer just on Bluetooth, like no login, no password, nothing. And this GameKit also lets you send audio over, specifically from the mic to the other person's speakers, like a walkie-talkie. And these guys wanted to change that to doing music, so they wanted to send music from the library over this really awesome Bluetooth connection. and then be able to play the music at the same time, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it didn't end up working out. The technology wasn't there. This game kit basically locks you down so you can only send audio from the mic and not from just anywhere you want. So the first night, I had stayed up till like 3 in the morning. We ended up leaving. We went to Next Space, right, Merrick?
Heck yes. Awesome. Awesome.
So we went to Next Space, and then it didn't work out. So the next day, the group disbanded. There was nothing to do. Everyone was like, whatever. So I was like, I'm going to enter my application called Real Money Slots. And this was basically just programmed by me because I got dumped out of another group. I would have really loved to help work with other people, be collaborative or whatever. But basically, there's a website, bettable.com, and they let you gamble real money. It's pounds, of course. It's not, you know, USD. And I just put a little app in that used their API, and there was no one else competing, really, because they were having some, like, technical issues, which was totally resolved, you know, later on. But the technical issues prevented other people from entering because they just couldn't figure out how to use their website. So I just made a little slot machine game. And basically, there was a couple different graphics I grabbed from this really cool graphics thing. It's called it's called Glyphs Fish or something. It's like, I'll put the link in the show. And it just made three little slot machine wheels, and you press spin, and you can win. Most of the icons were little babies, which was kind of weird, right, Merrick?
I think that kind of made it cool, and so, you know, it distinguished it. Like, if you had made I guess, what's the name of the regular name of this gambling game?
Like Charities or 12x12 or something like that.
Yeah. But it's Slot Machine. If you had made a complete Slot Machine clone, it would have been like, oh, well, I've seen that before. But the fact that you had these weird little quirky icons made it kind of like different and, you know, new and cool. So I kind of liked
it. So I ended up staying up all night to write this stupid app. And it was like, I was like 3 in the morning, I was chilling at Next Space, and I was like setting goals for myself. I was like, okay, by 4 in the morning, I have to have all the wheels spinning. And by 5 in the morning, I have to have like the money system worked out, because it was due at 2 o'clock. And so I was powering through, and it was like getting time. It was like half an hour before I had to submit my application. And the very last thing that I did was I put colors on like the very, very top winning prizes. I put like all yellow and all red, just so you could see the little colors go by. Like, not like you're ever going to get, you know, 777, but, you know, if you see it go by in color, you're like, oh, I want that one. And that, I felt like, really helped tell, you know, that there was something spinning, because on the projector you couldn't see that well if it was just the gray icons going by. It was crazy. I was up all night. I was like all stuttery, and I'll put the video in the show notes of my presentation. It was Merrick was there too.
Awesome. it was a good time. I helped out a little bit with the app. I didn't actually do any coding per se, but I did make a logo, an icon. I did a little bit of graphic arts work for it, and I went up and presented with Ben on stage, and it was cool. And if you'll notice in our video that actually we get the audience to laugh a couple of times, which is more than some of the other teams did, which
yes,
is pretty cool.
That's true. Definitely. I was getting some good feedback, and definitely. I had people, some of my friends, be like, oh, you're a good public speaker. And I kind of was like, well, I'm on a podcast. I kind of know a little bit what I'm doing. Maybe I'm a noob.
It was surprising. I mean, you'd stay up all night. I thought you were going to do a terrible job presenting that, being so tired and all, but you did a fantastic job.
Completely honest, I thought you were going to suck balls, but man, you did all right. That's funny. Real quick, back to Bettable. I guess their organization started in the UK because they use pounds instead of dollars, but it may just be that there is some you know, regulatory or legal issues obviously going on with the United States and internet gambling right now. So I don't know I think they do have intentions of coming to the U.S., right? It's just a matter of working out the legal kinks.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if you want to go online and spend your money, I really don't see what the problem is.
Yeah.
Like, I could buy shitty graphics cards all day long and gamble that I'm going to make money on Bitcoin.
Right.
I mean, it's the same thing.
Dude, Distraction Depth 2. The Radeon 6990 is not a shitty graphics card, all right? That's $700 of pure PC horsepower.
That was your choice to buy it. I can make poor choices.
Anyway.
I should be allowed to make my own poor choices.
It's not even what I was like wanting you to comment on, so let's just take it back at Distraction Depth level. And what I was saying is the concept of... It seems to me that Bettable's been around for a little bit as far as a provider. There's a comment on their website that mentions someone reviewed them in 2010, so they've been around since at least August of last year, maybe, or something. So I kind of thought it was cool that they were at iOS Dev Camp and they had an API to show. And the API is in its early stages. You know, there's a few kinks, but it's nothing that can't be worked out. And I like the idea of having a gambling API available. Not that I'm, you know, in iOS development mode right now, but it seems cool that, you know, if you wanted, you could bust out a gambling app and use their API and then have, you know, real money flowing through your app. So that kind of impressed me.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a good way to monetize your thing. Your efforts. And to the point where that you just made the graphics, when you came, I mean, you actually had never touched Xcode before, and we looked at it a little bit, but we didn't really get into depth because I was hella busy up all night. But, I mean, if you want to go to one of these hackathon events and you're not really into programming, I mean, you probably are if you're listening to this podcast, but if you don't know much about programming, you can go and just work on Photoshop. You can go and just commit ideas. I mean, if it's a cheap conference, it's a lot of fun. And in this case, Merrick just came in and worked on Photoshop. You worked on some artwork for another group, right?
Definitely. No, the two teams I was on, yours and the, I guess we could call it the
Mashable.
Next Space team. Yeah, yes. Their product was Mashboard.
Mashboard. I apologize.
If you Google Panic Board, B-O-A-R-D, and click on the blog, the Panic blog, and see what I'm talking about. That's a product they were trying to build, or at least an iOS version of it, and it was really cool. And they more or less, you know, pulled it off, and
won the web app category, application just runs in the browser, which is kind of an interesting way to run apps on the iPhone, because there's lots of cool things you can do just running, you know, in the browser.
Definitely.
And that's what the category they won, so it was pretty cool.
So it was cool they won. I did a little bit of graphics for them, too, and I was using both Photoshop and Illustrator, and, you know, I've got some experience with that. I've done it recreationally in the past and, you know, for a few clients, but I even going into iOS Dev Camp, I knew I wasn't going to be working in Xcode much just because I have not at all, period, before, but I'm still glad I went and had a blast and look forward to, you know, maybe doing some actual coding next year.
And so, Sam, well, Sam just came for the last day. They opened it up for free after two.
Like general, general audience could come in and view the presentations that everyone was going to be having.
And so Sam showed up, and Sam, we looked at Xcode a little bit. What was your feeling about that?
I felt like there's a lot to learn. Like, I would need to... the feeling that I got was that I would need to obliterate that whole template that you had on the screen.
Yeah, so we were talking about this before the podcast started, but Sam basically said, well, all I did was just edit this template. That's all he did.
Which is, you know, pretty much the same attitude about writing batch scripts. Right?
You just copy what someone had done online before?
No. Even if I write one from scratch, I'm just putting stuff together, so I don't feel like...
But that's, you know, well, that's what programming is too, I believe. So
that's my approach to programming. The best way to learn to program, well, there's a lot of good ways, but if you want to get past the, I call it the, what do I call it? The dev time, where you're just basically stuck working on your tools. You know, that is installing Xcode, being able to compile Hello World, being able to put Hello World on the iPhone. Those aren't programming steps. Those are getting your tools set up right. And there's a lot of times when you're just stuck with your tools, not even working on the programming side, not even working on like the logic and the problem solving, that can just be a barrier to entry.
Which, as a reminder, is known as failed depth level.
Huge failed depth level. But what I'm saying is that, you know, Sam, basically his comment about our little time together was that all you did, Ben, was we just edited the template. But when I got started, in fact, when I made my real money slots, Sam, I just took that same template myself, right? I just took one page, I deleted everything on it, and made it my intro page. And then I went to the UI picker view, which is basically on iOS, that's like the date picker, where you slide your finger and it looks like a rotating...
Yeah.
Mile, like almost like the miles on your car or something like that. Looks like
odometer,
odometer, exactly. And so there was an example for that, and I said I need three of these, not just one. So I went in and I modified it until I was able to have three of them. And then once I had three, I basically added some logic behind it, and you know, I knew what I was doing. But the only reason I was able to make that entire the demo was polished. You know, the only reason I was able to make that demonstration was because I had the template. They already had pages. They were already linked together. They already did what I wanted to do. And I mean, that's one of the basic things that can really help you out in programming, is taking a template and just modifying it. It's so powerful. Yeah. And Sam, you claim that I have more skills, but that's all I've been doing my entire life. That's how I teach myself languages, you know?
Right, but you know how you just said you put some logic behind it?
Yeah.
That sounds like an oversimplification.
Well, it's not that big a deal, whether you're writing a little script to do something to a file or a little function to do something to some data. It's more or less the same thing.
All right.
In my opinion. I mean, you know.
No, yeah, you're right.
So, you know, there's a little bit of syntactical changes that are going to be happening, but at the same time, you know, you, whether you like it or not, Sam, you kind of are a programmer. Even though you're a scripter, and we've had this discussion before a million times before, you know, scripting versus programming, and, you know, a hammer versus a nail, and screwing, and all those other analogies, or that's not the word I'm looking for. Damn it.
Anyway, I understand.
You know what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about.
Cool.
Well, I thought it was pretty neat, and it was cool to see that simulator. You know, I've seen it in you know, YouTube videos, and I don't know where else. Development blogs or something. But,
oh, the Xcode
iOS
simulator.
Yeah, what is he talking about? He's talking about the Xcode simulator.
Gotcha.
See,
so yeah. within Xcode, you can launch a little hardware simulator that'll pop up a little iPhone on your screen, and you can, you know, kind of run your app that or whatever you're working on, and it'll, you know, you get to kind of
each
play with it, interact
like
with it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Do they have that for the iPad in there, too? Or?
They do. You can set the mode to iPad, and that's
nice.
How you would develop your interface for iPad. One
cool.
thing to note about that little simulator is that it's running Intel x86 binary code, whereas when you compile for the iPhone, that's ARM7 or ARM6 binary mm-hmm. code. And so they're not binary compatible. You can't just take the binary from one and run it on the other. So the only reason that you're only even able to run on that simulator is because you've got the source code. So when you change the simulator mode, the compiler is literally changing the binary output. So you get totally different opcodes, the CPUs are doing totally different things, are totally different mindsets and everything. You're compiling for the simulator, and then your little app pops up, and they're basically exactly the same, but there's some things that are different, by the way.
Interesting. So to test for real and to make sure whatever you're working on is good, you'd obviously have to have a device and, you know, run it and make sure it's
right.
working like you
so
like.
So this it didn't bite me in the ass, but it became apparent to me because in my app I have three little picker views, and I tell them to spin, and when they spin by, and then I tell them to, you know, stop on a value. And in the simulator, there's no spinning. They just jump to the immediate value that you told them to go to.
Weird.
So I was really concerned. I was like, oh, my spinning effect isn't working. And then I was like, oh, let me build to my little iPod 2, and the spinning was totally working just fine.
Huh. So I imagine in this case it sort of worked in your favor, like you thought you had a problem, but then you didn't.
Right.
I assume often it works the other way around.
Yeah,
totally.
And that held me up for about 2 minutes, whereas I could see myself beating 2 hours of my head against it and then realizing, I need to build like on the device.
Oh.
So it's important that you have them both. And that's another, that's like a dev time thing. Once again, you could be stuck hitting your head against something, and really it's just your tool chain that's fucking with you.
Hmm.
ARM.
Yeah.
ARM versus x86. That's intriguing. I hadn't really thought about that before. It's interesting you just mentioned it, too. The current, I believe, issue of Maximum, September issue of Maximum PC has a pretty good little in-depth article on ARM versus x86, and I don't want to really recap it here. You can subscribe to the magazine or check it out on our website. What's cool about Maximum PC, now that we're at Distraction Depth 1 here, is their past issues they have on their website. So it's one of my favorite magazines, and you can get all of their past issues on their website. Obviously, they don't give away the most current one, but, you know, once the next issue comes out, they'll, as far as I know, just put the last issue up on their website in PDF form, and you can check out these cool articles. And if you're curious about ARM versus x86, check out the article in the September issue of Maximum PC.
Great. So another one of the trends that I saw at iOS Dev Camp was Google Plus. Google Plus just came out, and we're going to talk about that basically right now. But the trend was that people were talking about Google Plus. It wasn't, oh, let me Facebook you. Oh, let me do this to you. It was, let's Google Plus. really, it was.
I like the subtle voice change or the intonation you did just there. Oh, let me Facebook you. No, bitch. I use Google Plus. What, ho?
and I don't want to like drop any names, but the older guy that was working around in your app, I don't even know what his name is.
Sean. You know,
Sean Gilgan.
Yeah,
he's actually cool like a big personality, so I guess I can't say his name. But he was like, oh, that's Facebook, right? He didn't have Google Plus. He's a little bit of like an older guy. But all of the young, up-and-coming like programmer types, they were all about Google Plus.
He's on it now, so props to him for picking it up that quickly. But you know, he's a Nextspace friend, and he's a cool guy. And I met him at Nextspace Santa Cruz, and he was on our little Nextspace team that came up with Mashboard, the product I mentioned earlier.
And so even though he was on it, though, his first thing was, oh, let me Facebook you. It wasn't Google Plus. So I'm just saying, like,
you're still doing that thing with your voice. It's so funny.
So much disdain in your voice.
According to Ben, people who Facebook each other sound a little bit like this. Like, what do you mean? I don't know what that is, but anyway, that's funny. And I am a huge fan of Google Plus. And
so let's wrap up iOS Dev Camp and just talk about Google Plus, our next subject. So
cool. So do we have anything else for iOS Dev Camp, or is that it? Good time. We recommend it. Do it if you can, even if you're not even remotely near Silicon Valley, which is where this is going to be next year, iOS Dev Camp 2012. This year it was hosted by eBay, so at the eBay and PayPal offices in San Jose, though, is where the main event is hosted, and they have satellite events, so check out the website in there. If you want, if you're motivated, you could even start a satellite event, which means you would have people come together where you live, wherever that is, and then compete next year in iOS Dev Camp. Which is cool.
Yeah, by the way, we were talking about this before the show, but if you guys know of any good RSS feeds or links or places where like hackathons like these are kind of coalesced together, we would be really interested, because Merrick and I had such a blast, and I hope Sam you did too, that we would like to know about more of these in our area. And, you know, if someone knows a good way where those things have been put together, you know, even by region or whatever, it's really cool to know about the things that are going on around you.
Definitely. So check out the website, check out an event, go to one. Even if you're not a coder, do it. You'll like it. You'll enjoy it.
Just Photoshop for people. It's really easy. People will be your friend. You could be on five different teams. You could win five different prizes by being on five different teams just for Photoshop. It can happen to you. It happened to Merrick, right?
It totally did. It was awesome. But what? I illustrated too, all right?
Yeah. All right.
That's cool, though. So, all right, so we're good then. Are we ready to transition here?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
So, what is Google Plus?
I believe it is a new sexual product. It is going to pioneer the way people interact with machines physically. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That's totally something different, completely different. My bad. Got that mixed up. It's a new social networking product, right?
Yeah,
it's exactly. Kind of like Buzz, but better, because Buzz was like, wait, what's this? And people were like, huh. But Google Plus is like a more polished social networking product, in my opinion. And it actually, without me having numbers in front of me, it seems like it could be a competitor to Facebook.
Oh, it is. It fully is. Everyone's talking about it, and that means that it has, like, I mean, I could be wrong, but the amount of people that are switching to it, I mean, the thing about fucking Facebook that pisses me off is I was in college. I was there at the ground level. Facebook came out, and it was only for college kids. It was like a social status to be on Facebook.
Exclusive.
It was exclusive. It was like an exclusive club, right?
Just like Mark Zuckerberg. He didn't come up with that. It was the Winklevi twins. Sorry. Distraction death. All right, go back.
And so it was like, I could add everybody. Like, if you met someone, you would add them because they were an acquaintance. You knew that they were cool because they were on Facebook. It was like a college thing. And you just added your acquaintances, and you added your best friends, the people that you knew, you just added them to Facebook. There was no separation, right? They were the same level of cool. But then the floodgates opened, and everybody freaking joined Facebook. They took off the email requirement, which required your email be at a university.
.edu, yeah.
Right. Well, it was per school, even.
Oh,
they opened it per school, like, just to make sure that they could get the bandwidth right and stuff like that.
I totally remember trying to get on back in the day, and I was at a community college that did not have .edu email addresses, and I was pissed because I was like, fuck, people are on Facebook and they're cool and I'm not and I suck. God damn it.
They might have just opened it to .edu later, but in the beginning it was actually per school.
Just per university. Yeah, uh-huh. No, you're totally right. And uh-huh. But anyway, and then all of a sudden, fast forward, your mom's on Facebook and it's like,
and
wait,
I, and
what's
all this
going
history,
on?
All this history of things that I had shared and just put onto my exclusive group is now viewable to the world, and mm-hmm. one of the things is the more Facebook has progressed with all their new things, the more I've pushed it away. And one of the problems is that they set up these default privileges, which just open you up. So I have all, you know, they open up all your content to the world. So I have all this legacy crap on there that maybe, you know, I don't like to, you know, if I have a picture of me drunk, right, I don't want to go to an interview and have them look at that, you know.
Totally.
Doesn't matter, you know, I just don't want certain things online.
And once it's public, it's been indexed and cached, and you're not getting rid of it.
Right, but if it was just in the private network, then there was a lower chance of someone just hitting Google.
Or even if it was a random picture floating around without his name attached to it, that's fine too.
Exactly. And so the cool thing about Google Plus is that now everybody gets it. You get what Facebook can turn into. Like, you mm-hmm. get that it can just get out of control. So what they do is they have little circles. They call them circles. And you have one that's acquaintances, you have one that's friends and family, and there's maybe another one that's default, and then you can add as many as you want. So I could do a circle for iOS Dev Camp if I wanted to, or I could do a circle for whatever. And then I can share awesome, you know, whatever pics or cool Linux things to my friends and not worry about my mom being like, what's Linux? Like, I don't need to share it to her because it doesn't matter. And I'm able to keep it, you know, I'm able to keep my circles of cool without, you know, the Facebook effect taking over and having it change out from under my feet. I feel like Google Plus has locked down that permission thing.
And kind of what it is for me, too, is, you know, how there's Google kind of has this friendly trust sort of thing going on with you. And, you know, they are kind of like the we're going to be cool about this internet presence, whereas a lot of bad rapport has, you know, there's this kind of history with Microsoft, obviously, and, you know, all of that, and then Facebook, you know, now kind of some of the things you just described, and there's other issues out there too where people, you know, may or may not like Facebook because of fill in the blank, whatever your reason is. And with Google, I kind of feel like you can trust them a little more. I don't know if that makes sense or sounds weird, but I'm not extremely concerned about the control I will or will not have over my data with Google because they will give me the options. They, you know, in
but I mean. I mean, to be fair, though, they're just chopping you up and selling you like meat to advertisers. I mean, they're literally looking at your age, your location, your likes, your dislikes, your sex, you know, your sexual orientation.
Oh, you're talking about Facebook.
Well, no, I'm talking about Google. I'm talking about advertising. Yeah. I mean, Google's doing all the same thing that Facebook's doing for advertising. And
okay, well, if they are, I'd say they're doing it in a friendlier way.
No, yeah,
that makes
I guess.
Any sense.
I mean, you know, you just have to keep it in perspective. It's not free. I mean, Google, how much money does Google cost to run? I mean, Jesus Christ.
Well,
all
no,
the
it's not like
they're
losing money. Advertising is their biggest revenue stream, and
I mean,
it
when
makes
it comes
sense.
Down to it, they're an advertising company. They're not
they
a
are.
Facebook. They're not a social networking company. They're not an email company. They're an advertising company.
They are, but I believe they do it in a way such that, you know, kind of a relationship is between built between the user and Google such that you have a modicum of control, at least more so than you would other places,
yeah,
over
smooth.
Your information. Go on, Sam. What were you saying?
I'm saying they're smooth. Smooth operators.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah, I didn't hear you.
Google has... they've been able to keep that up for a surprisingly long duration. That sort of friendly persona on the internet. It's just
definitely.
It's persisted. And I sort of expected it to die off a long time ago. It does, you know, sometimes in some circles, you know, it's died off, but you know, people get really pissed off over, you know, privacy circumstances that may or may not actually materialize, you know. There's a lot of worry about that stuff. But,
I've been a fan since Gmail, since I signed up for my Gmail account in 2005. I don't remember how I even got on, if I was invited or randomly got in, whatever, but I've been a fan since then.
Yeah.
But back to Google Plus, that's what we were talking about.
So Sam, what do you feel about Google Plus?
In many respects, it feels like a slightly modified Facebook. When you look at it, you know, the layout is roughly similar. It's got the three, you know, panes, the, what do you call them, columns. You can share stuff. You can plus one stuff. I'm not entirely clear on what the difference. I mean, what, I don't really know what plus one-ing is. Is it just the same thing?
Yeah, Merrick
as
and
like?
I couldn't figure that out either. Merrick wanted to plus one something and share it with me, and it didn't work.
Oh.
Well, I know, I don't know if it's a bug or not, but some of the stuff I plus one'd is not appearing in my plus ones column or section, whatever that is. I think that's obviously Google Plus is still in kind of a limited release as they work the kinks out, which is kind of impressive given the popularity of it and how much people were talking about it recently, you know, and how much it's been in the headlines recently. Given that it's in a limited trial and not everyone can just jump on it, I think you still have to be invited, as
right,
far as
which
I
is
know.
Basically not that big of a barrier, but it allows
no.
them to have
yeah.
the traffic come online slowly, which is very important if you're launching a giant, epic, scalable system. I mean, they probably had to spend another couple $1 million a year just to run Google Plus. I mean, when you think about them starting a new service, which is going to get new traffic,
mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously the revenue they get is going to be greater, but in terms of, like, buying new servers or making sure their servers work,
mm-hmm.
setting up new databases and backups and all these new things, I mean, you know, you have to make sure that everything's working properly.
But Google's pretty hardcore when it comes to innovating, and although I totally agree with you, Sam, it is kind of like a modified Facebook. It just because I already have this rapport with Google and you know, I trust them, I have been averse to social networking. I am not on Facebook that often, even though I, you know, have a bunch of people
friended
on there.
So you're averse to it just at the baseline?
Previous to Google Plus, I was averse to social networking, and with my current groups, with my circles I have here on Google Plus, I'm warming up to it. It's like, you know,
right?
Yeah, I am, and you know, I'm on there more often. I'm, you know, posting stuff, I'm commenting, and I don't see myself getting into it too heavy and hardcore. Like I noticed some people who actually spend a lot of time putting up content and post, and like they want to be a thing, kind of like as we put effort in this podcast, and you know, we think it's cool, we have listeners, and you know, we want to keep doing that. There are people who do that with posting stuff, and I randomly found one of them, a quick shout out, his name's Carlos Cardona, and I found him based off proximity when I was working downtown Santa Cruz at Nextspace. I was swiping through the screens, and you can view posts by proximity, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I saw Carlos posted something about, you know, some kind of cool new web thing, and he's post stuff that's interesting to me. Like his last couple of posts have to do with, you know, Chrome development tools, or who has the best mobile web app, or, you know, passwords are broken, public private keys are a good idea but don't scale well. Those are just three recent posts I'm reading about him, so you know, that's
very
the
nice.
Kind of stuff we're into, and you know, I'm gonna have to go ahead and give him a shout out. And if you're on Google Plus, you might as well look him up, because he's putting up some pretty good content that's pretty much the same exact stuff we talk about. So, you know, I'm impressed with that, but at the same time, I will never see myself doing that. It's just, for whatever reason, my social networking phobia, you know, is such that I will participate, and I'll, you know, dip my toes in a little bit, but I don't see myself going nuts on it.
That's so different, because I had, like, full-blown like social network, like when Facebook hit in college, it was
mm-hmm.
like cool, it was hip, everybody was, you'd put everything on Facebook, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now I keep getting burned and burned and burned, and I'm just pushing myself farther and farther away from Facebook, and now I just use it for family stuff. Like I go and see my family, that's great, but as far as like, you know, all that stuff you were just talking about, I just don't do it. It's so such a different approach, I guess.
Have you guys seen Top Gear before?
Like,
sorry to interrupt
yes,
you.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
You kind of just made me think of the cool wall, and Facebook is kind of moving from the cool to the not so cool, or whatever the categories are. It's like kind of, you know, based on what we're talking about, what you guys are saying, Facebook is, you know, being shifted down the cool category into something else. But back to what you guys were saying.
I was just saying that I've treated social media in a similar fashion to the way Merrick has.
So you've been cautious about it too.
Yeah, just because, you know, when you know how it works and you know how much goes into the advertising stream and how much data is being aggregated and stored, it's like, I don't know. It just leaves you with this sort of reserved feeling, at least for me anyway.
It's funny you mention that. My friend Bennett, we've mentioned him before, he's the one who got me into Colmac. He is, like, super paranoid about this stuff, and he is anti, like, hugely anti. And we had a conversation once, and he, like, was explaining how it bothered him that there's data about him just aggregated out there, and, like, you know, he... It's hard to describe, but it's kind of like what you just mentioned to the next level.
You know, right. And when I started on Facebook, though, that wasn't going on.
Yeah.
It was being stored, but it wasn't being aggregated.
And there was obviously a lot less, you know, horseshit. There was no Farmville. There was no
ads
popping up.
When apps came, I was like, it's going downhill because it's turning into MySpace at that point.
God, MySpace, that's a fucking train wreck now.
And when I got
Do you
MySpace,
remember all this shit you would see on profiles on MySpace?
Oh,
the
God.
Fucking glittering pictures, the
oh,
ridiculous
God.
Fucking ads. It was just
that
so
thing
bad.
Could bring a dual core system to a crawl. It was amazing. So I'm like, bad. How do you do that? I'm like, this is like a 3 gigahertz dual core system, and you brought that thing to a crawl.
MySpace.
On a web page.
I totally
for
forgot
MySpace.
It was even a thing until you guys just mentioned it. It's so bad. I gotta go in and delete my account. I don't. It's. I totally.
You
I
have
still
MySpace?
Have my profile kind of pimped. I'm not gonna lie. Not bad. I don't have a tacky profile. I'm gonna put that out there right now. You can look me up. Well, actually,
mine
my
too,
name's
dude.
Not
I
on
put,
there.
Like a nice black background with red, like dotted table borders and stuff.
You guys are so classy.
That's funny. That's that was part of me warming up to social networking. Was I still. And I have a teeny little bit of the paranoia, too, because I, on MySpace, for a little bit on MySpace, maybe back in the 2005 era, I had my actual name on my MySpace, and a bunch of people from my past that I like kind of was like, whoa, were like, hey, how you doing? What's up? Like, ex-girlfriends and people like I hadn't talked to since high school, and I'm like, whoa, I'm taking my name off MySpace. And I went back to one of my random handles, and, you know, that was... part of me warming up to social networking was, you know, the transition to Facebook. All right, my name's on there. People are finding me, whatever. I'm used to it. And then, you know, mess around with it, try it. I'm still skeptical. And no, I'm not going to play Farmville. And no, I don't give a shit if your fucking carrots are dying. I'm not going to water them, you know. block that person. And then, you know, now that Google Plus came out, I'm, you know, I'm comfortable with it. And, you know, my, I guess... medium, low to medium amount of social interaction on it. I like it.
If they're smart, if Google allows some like Facebook, I mean, sorry, some Farmville water my carrots notification type thing, if they're smart, they will have that shit blocked by default. So
totally.
You have to enable it. That
totally.
Just stuff is so awful.
Totally. No, like, I would venture a guess that they are not going to let it go that direction. They won't have apps or allow games. I would just
right.
say they're going to avoid, obviously, some of the annoyances that are now proliferating on Facebook.
Yeah, I would be surprised if Google would allow something like that. In 2005 is when News Corp paid $580 million for MySpace.
And now they just sold it recently for a lot less.
Yeah, like
yeah.
nothing.
Yeah, like $35 million.
That sucks.
Ouch.
Sometimes I feel bad when I like waste $500. I look back, I'm like, man, that was very smart. And then you hear that in the news, you're like, well, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
But obviously that wasn't one person. That was, you know, this big fucking organization or conglomerate or corporation, whatever. So money's different. But obviously if you're a CEO or a COO or some high-up person in one of those companies, that's going to still be on your record. And it's going to be like, wow, you guys kind of suck.
Yeah, it's like you bought MySpace. Sorry about your luck.
I may not be very cool, but I sure as hell didn't buy MySpace. Dis.
Burn.
Ouch. That's ridiculous. I'm going to try to look up my MySpace right now. You guys should go back to talk about what
okay,
we were talking
so,
about.
Okay, so I'd like to... If we're done... Are we done with Google Plus? I'd like to transition now.
Yes.
Okay, so the verdict is we like it. It's cool. Better than Facebook. You should get on it. If you're not on it, send us an email at packets@portforwardpodcast.com and we will invite the shit out of you.
Yes,
you
we will.
You can be on it. You'll like it.
So I was just looking at my email and I just got recently an email from another listener giving us some feedback who just sent to that that wonderful email address you just gave us, Merrick.
Nice.
And he says, keep making the show. It's like hanging out with like-minded guys while I commute and do the gardening. He says also that he's in the UK, so he doesn't have to deal with the horseshit that AT&T gives us. Oh, all the best, Andy. So thanks
bit,
for your.
I'm jealous of his non-AT&T having country and their Autobahn, if he has that and where he is.
Excellent, Andy. Nice.
So I'd like to go into our next section, which is a little bit of Bitcoin sense, and just give a little bit of feedback. No one has said anything in specific about Bitcoin from last show, so I assume that everything that we said was 100% correct.
And completely clear and coherent. I'm sure that's pretty much how we always talk. So
so Neil mentions a website, and give a little bit of feedback from Neil. This is en.bitcoin.it/wiki/weaknesses. And this basically talks about some of the different attacks you can do against the Bitcoin network. And I took a look at this page, and some of the things that we were talking about in the last previous show, episode number 12, are listed as probably not a problem on this page. So all of the crypto stuff we were talking about breaking, you know, different things, Bitcoin, blockchain splitting and stuff like that. They talk about all the different things, and I don't want to get into a lot of depth, but they do cover a couple of different attacks that we did not get to last weekend. Some of the things you can do are you can flood the IRC room, and that is the part of Bitcoin where everybody connects on. It's kind of like the it's the meetup. Everyone goes there and then starts a peer-to-peer network, and you can do things like they can register like 1,000 people in the IRC and just block out your client. Wouldn't that be awful, Sam, if they just, like, took over all your connections?
It would be a disaster.
So I guess if they're able to control all the people that you talk to on Bitcoin, they can put you on a separate network. So they can basically fool your client into being on a totally different world.
Right, and you would think that you're paying people or think that you're receiving money or whatever.
Right, so doing that opens you up to double spending attacks.
Right, you're basically... It's kind of like making a separate mini Bitcoin.
Yeah, like, separate mini blockchain. It's like that blockchain is a balance sheet. So you're making a new balance sheet, and since it's global, you know, you have two different globals, which means they need to be conflicting, right? So,
yeah.
Another thing that they cover on that webpage is time jacking, which I won't even get into because I didn't research it. But it looks pretty cool. And if you guys are interested in more Bitcoin topics like these, we'll certainly do some coverage on that in the future. So please let us know if you're interested in that.
Shoot us an email, let us know what you want to know about, and we will try to learn and not confuse you.
Speaking of, it looks like nobody has donated to our podcast using Bitcoin, so shame on you, all of you out there.
No, we're not ungrateful bastards, not at all. We just the only reason we're asking for your money is not so much that we can have it, it's just so that we want to try this whole Bitcoin thing. So we want to see if it's actually real or not.
Yeah, I'd like a couple coins to kick out of my account. That's
go ahead
the reason. You're
send
correct.
Us a couple hundred Bitcoin, and we'll let you know if it works or not.
Another thing they talk about in this article is the fact that you can have multiple receiving addresses, but only one sending address. So one of the things we talked about last week is one of the ways to stay anonymous is to change your address every so often when you're receiving Bitcoins. It looks like the Bitcoins can only be sent, though, from the originating account. So what that means is you can actually track the money as it flows through the system. So if you use advanced data mining techniques, you can look and see where Bitcoins go from one place to the next.
Ooh.
So while you are anonymous, you can't disconnect, I guess, the Bitcoin trail. So there's always a trail of some sort.
Right.
I mean, I suppose there would be ways to launder it, right?
Sorry, I'm not chiming in. I'm totally distracted right now.
That's fine.
And it has to do with, you know, just real quick, we can come right back. I went to my MySpace because I was curious. I was totally curious what the hell is going on with it. And my mind is just a little bit blown because they scraped my Google Buzz posts and they have that shit on there. And I'm like, wait, I've not been on MySpace forever. What is all this content doing here and what's going on? And they found my name on my Google shit and they're posting it on my MySpace. And I was just like, what's going on? That's why all of a sudden I'm just totally not part of the show anymore. So I'm actually going to close that tab now. So I'm participating again now. We can go back to what we were talking about, and I'm done.
Good vocab word there, Merrick, is scrape. I would use that word if I were to say, downloading from a website. So if one machine is downloading from another, I would call it scraping the server. For instance, if we have an RSS feed, that's where all of our MP3s go. And when your little podcaster app connects, it's scraping the RSS to see if there's anything new.
That's cool. Yeah, no, that's bullshit that MySpace thinks they can put up shit that I didn't put on there. So I'm definitely going to delete my account if I remember sometime tonight. We'll see how that goes. But back to the Bitcoin.
So we're talking about the fact that you can, if you receive, let's say, 100 Bitcoins, even though you can make new addresses, you can't send those Bitcoins out from separate addresses. They have to be sent out from the receiving account.
Gotcha.
So that basically means that you can track people through the network. So there's been, lots of people worried about this. There's even people been talking about dirty Bitcoins. So, for instance, if someone steals, let's say, 1 million Bitcoins from someone's account and everybody agrees, they know that that was really a, everybody agrees that that was stolen Bitcoins and whatever, people are hypothesizing about putting blacklists together. So as you see the Bitcoins leave those accounts, you can basically track it around, and maybe certain merchants wouldn't be accepting, dirty Bitcoins.
That's pretty
nice. But how would you make the client be aware of that at the network level like that?
Well, it wouldn't be a client thing. It would be a separate, it would be like a pure guardian kind of thing, where
unless they built a client feature in or a revised client that had that functionality,
I doubt that the official open source version would go to it. But someone could fork the client, which is totally doable, add that in.
The major exchanges were to keep track of it, I suppose, too, maybe.
That's more what we would be taken care of is on the website, Sam.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I gotcha. I guess my question is, how would I know that I'm getting
away. It would almost be like you'd get some Bitcoin, and then if you tried to cash it out in the exchange, they'd be like, uh-oh, this may possibly be stolen according to our blah, 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 is what my guess would be, which would kind of suck, obviously. But this is all hypothetical, what we're talking about right now, right? That's nothing. None of this is actually
done. Yeah, none of this
exists,
but it's certainly possible to do. I mean, you can totally launder the money. That's not hard to do. Yeah. If you have... I mean, you could even make a web service that would do that.
Clean your Bitcoins. Bitcoinwasher.com.
I was actually thinking about this hypothetically. If you had 3 accounts on this Bitcoin Washer website, and if you wanted to launder your coins, you would divide them evenly between the 3 accounts, and then they would pay them out to you however you would want to. And so in the network, you would see all this money funneling into these 3 accounts, and then when it came out, you wouldn't know if it was clean or not. Because
Bitcoin laundering. We totally just invented a business right now. That's so awesome. Oh, man. If someone ever makes money at that and it's not us, I'm pissed.
You're going to be so pissed.
That's funny.
So, basically that URL I read off, you'll be in the show notes as well, has lots of other cool weaknesses and attacks. And honestly, that's the kind of stuff I'm really interested in Bitcoin, is how the system could break down. One other thing, while we were talking about the sort of trends, we're talking about iOS DevCamp, one of the trends that I've seen in Bitcoin is that I will talk to people online, I'll talk to people about the show or just Bitcoin in general, and everyone has this sort of idea or this sort of attitude, and they say, Bitcoin is cool if it works. Everybody says if it works. But it's like a universal theme. Everybody is talking about Bitcoin. They're really excited about it, and they say if it works. And it's kind of my opinion that it's going to work and that it already does work, because there are certain places that accept it. It's becoming, it's coming online, and it hasn't gone away. No one's like hacked into it or broken it or broken the technology.
Well, there was an event. If you go on the Bitcoin Wikipedia, there was kind of a bad thing that happened. I don't remember the details, but it was like, when I think one of the exchanges got hacked.
Mt. Gox got hacked. And, we could talk about that. That's almost like an entire episode. If you guys want to hear about that, we will dedicate an episode to that. But,
or at least a chunk of it. And that was kind of a speed bump from my point of view, in my opinion. That was a speed bump in the Bitcoin, whatever you want to call it, lifespan so far. I don't see it going, though.
You know what I mean? That's
I totally agree with you. I don't see it going away. There's lots of reasons why I think it's cool, and the obvious reasons are it's decentralized. No one is the boss of Bitcoin. No one's in charge. It's not regulated.
Which means you can outsource to India. Let's say you're outsourcing like programming your UI, you're programming whatever, and if you could send them Bitcoins, assuming that they would accept it, right? You wouldn't have to pay PayPal money to send, you know, coins.
Yeah,
you know,
it's not taxed, and it will likely never be taxed. You know,
exactly.
That's one. These are a few really cool things about it, and it's funny you mentioned that. That's been these different people you talk to. That's their
that's
attitude,
yeah,
and
exactly,
that, that's
yeah.
kind of my outlook on it too. I think it's pretty cool if it works.
I think that it already does work. I think that the people are coming online and writing new applications, and there's an Android application that's coming on that lets you trade coins, and it's just like. It's so natural. It's so everybody gets it, and everybody accepts that it's legit. That's what it is, Merrick. It's that people accept it as legitimate. It's not that people are questioning whether or not it's going to spread around,
mm-hmm.
but they all accept it as if like, oh, that is a real thing that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all a currency needs. Is it needs global acceptance, or you know, majority of people that all say this has value, and we value it as X, and we will use it.
If you build it, they will come.
Exactly.
And coming soon, a Bitcoin laundering service, so stay tuned for that. More. Check out portfordpodcast.com in like 10 years.
In like 10 years, it'll happen.
That's funny.
And there'll be 21 million Bitcoins by then, presumably.
There totally will be, or very close to. I guess if they're going to keep having it, you know, at those time frames to make it so... Obviously, you're going to have to be using your video cards for something else besides mining then, but...
Oh, yeah. Thank you for mentioning mining. So the other kind of trend that I saw is that when I talked to these people, actually just one guy was a little bit confused about it. He said, oh, well, Bitcoin's going to die down because the mining is asymptotically reducing to zero. Basically,
yeah.
You know, right? And I said, dude, you're missing the point. It's a currency. It's not about mining. It's about a currency. You know, sure, people are going to stop mining. Like as soon as it you know, gets halved and halved again, like in 8 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
People
mm-hmm.
probably won't be mining this hardcore, right? Right now, people are like investing lots of money into mining.
No, but it is right now. It is profitable to mine right now, depending on your cost of electricity. But once that cuts down, I think a lot of people are going to get out of mining, and that
and they're
going to
sell
it.
They're going to flood the market with video cards. So basically,
so wait, if you're looking to come up on some freaking video cards, wait till what like early like first quarter next year is
exactly
when it's happening
when it goes
or something.
Down to 25. Yeah, some people might get out then, but when it gets
keep
halved again,
out.
I'm pretty sure when it happens again, people are going to really get out.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So I mean. That's a benefit, right? I mean, that's stimulating the economy right there. You're buying video cards, right?
That's a benefit, right?
No, it is. It fully
no,
is.
No, no. I was thinking, I still want to mine. It's so weird how I want to do this. And part of me is like, you're going to spend a fucking shitload of time doing it, and you might make a little bit of money. And part of me is like, yeah, but you can overclock the shit out of some video cards, and it'll be so cool.
Yeah, totally with you, Merrick.
Part of me wants to do it, and you know, I had a little story in my mind. This justification was, well, maybe, just maybe, if I got someone to invest, I could build, like, a data center, right? You know, nothing huge, just start out with, like, maybe 25 mining rigs or something like that. And while these things are churning away, you know, mining, I could start to build some kind of CUDA-like open-source interface, except for it'd be for Radeons or, you know, what's the parent company there? I always get
NVIDIA.
NVIDIA. I'd start to build some kind of open-source, you know, hardware level interface for these things, and then maybe I could obviously once the next couple of cycles happened with the whatever you call it with the Bitcoin and it's no longer profitable to mine, you could use this horsepower, this processing, this general GPU compute, this computing power,
right.
And have some kind of miniature, you know, cloud number
service
crunching service. Yeah, totally.
Right, exactly. That's like that's very forward-looking of you, Merrick.
Well, you know,
I'm
always trying
idea.
To think of making money, so that's pretty much how my mind works. When it's not thinking about girls, I'm thinking about making money. Oh, man. But anyway.
So, but I mean, the trend amongst these people was that, oh, you know, the mining's not going to be as good and people are going to leave. But that just means that the miners are going to leave. That doesn't mean that all the merchants are going to leave.
No,
and everyone
not at
else
all.
Is going to leave. And there's kind of like a misperception that, you know, that it's not going to last because of that. And I really...
I'm with you on it. On it surviving and it being a thing. As long as there is an internet, there's going to be a Bitcoin.
It's just like BitTorrent. It's very similar in terms of decentralized.
Totally. And that's one of the very cool things about it.
Any last Bitcoin thoughts, guys?
Well, yeah, another thing is that someone has to have those coins that are mined, correct?
Yes.
At all times.
Except for when that random thing we mentioned about wallets getting destroyed. The coins are out there.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, when you got 21 million, or even let's say only half of them get mined, and at some point everybody stops mining.
The first 4 years, half of them get mined, so...
Okay.
Cool. You could say, let's say only an eighth or a sixteenth got mined. That's better.
All right, fine. Let's say an eighth get mined, right. And then everybody shuts off all their video cards and everything.
I guess not an eighth. It would be like 7/8.
Wait, aren't there more than that already out there?
No, we're approaching half of them.
Mm-hmm.
You said it was 6.5 and change last time.
Okay, so we're looking at 7 million out there, just for bullshitting sake.
Right, okay.
7 million Bitcoin out there. All right, back to what you were saying, Sam?
Yeah, so, I mean, someone needs to have those coins, always. Do they not? I mean, those need to exist.
No, they do. They're passing them around. They're trading them for tangible and intangible goods.
Yeah. So, I mean, that system kind of needs to exist.
Wait.
I mean, once all of the hardcore miners drop off because it's not extremely profitable, right? Mm-hmm. That means less people are going to be winning those blocks. They're going to be winning the blocks, which means that it's going to be more profitable. The difficulty is going to go down.
So maybe you can CPU mine again.
Nah, I don't know.
Well, it's interesting what you mentioned about the hardcore miners. I would venture to say that, I don't know, it seems to me that when it becomes less profitable, it's the people with the homebrew setups that are going to drop out first because they're paying for their own electricity and it's
okay.
not like a
maybe
business
that's
operation.
Correct. So the homebrews are going to drop off and then the hardcore guys are going to...
Yeah, they're going to do something else. They are the ones... That's when you'll see 50 video cards come up on eBay, you know, slightly used. But anyway, no, aside from who is and isn't mining and how long it's going to be profitable, I don't see it going away either, and I think it's cool, and I'm looking forward to when it's easier to trade Bitcoin for, you know, the currencies you use in your country.
And one other thing, actually I did realize that there was one correction, so I lied a little bit. Neil points out that I was incorrect about the 4.2 megabyte growth per year. We talked about that last time on the show, and I said something to the effect of 4.2 megabytes is the largest it can grow. But apparently...
sir, are an asshole.
The maximum size of a block is a megabyte, which would be really hard. I don't know how you'd get a block that was a megabyte. And so at 10 times a minute, that works about 52 gigs a year. So that is apparently one of the attack vectors, I think, is if you can make really large blocks, you can make the chain pretty large.
And I guess how is that a vulnerability? I don't quite understand.
Well, I mean, if you were just basically fucking with the network the whole time, I mean, maybe it's not a vulnerability, but I mean, if you were just creating giant blocks for everybody by making tiny little transactions,
they would be like slow down processing it.
It would slow down everything really badly.
Yeah, and people coming online, when you first come online, you have to download from the
Genesis
block. Oh,
you do. You totally do. Yeah,
you have to download 56 gigs
per year, right? So more than that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not a problem yet, I guess, obviously.
No, and there is a compression mechanism in there, and I don't know a lot about it, but you can compress the blockchain and basically delete old parts of the chain, but that has to be after time. So there's kind of a time, you have to wait a certain amount of time before you can forget individual transactions that are in the blockchain and just basically say, you know, at X time, everyone had this amount and forget all the individual transactions in between people before that.
Gotcha.
Yep. So that was something I got wrong. So please let me know if you guys listened to the previous Bitcoin episode. If you disagree with anything, please send us feedback at packets@portforwardpodcast.com. Anything else we want to cover, guys?
I'm good.
All right. You should check out our website, which is www.portforwardpodcast.com. Subscribe to the RSS, download the MP3s, take a look at the show notes, all the
so
fun
follow us
stuff.
On Twitter.
Oh, one last
Twitter.
Thing.
Yeah, we, oh,
we set up a Twitter account, and that was one of the trending things at iOS Dev Camp. I know Twitter's not new, but for me, I kind of was staying away from it. Once again, the social network phobia kind of thing.
Yeah,
I've
yeah.
had that towards Twitter. But now that I have a podcast, I have something that's official that I can tweet about, and so our handle is something. It's Port.
It's Port FWD Podcast. Forward podcast.
So the forward we couldn't fit all the way. So forward is reduced, but the other words are spelled out all the way.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned the Twitter. It wasn't just trending at iOS Dev Camp. It was like the fucking main thing. They kind of had this. If there was a feed for the event, it may as well have been Twitter. There was a video feed that you could pull from their site, but that has that's shut down. The event's not happening anymore. But if you I'm
they had a couple hashtags, right? One of the hashtags was iOS Dev Camp.
Exactly. So if you
and
search
iOS
that
Dev
hashtag,
Camp 2011.
You'll come up with a bunch of stuff. And they had what I thought was kind of cool was they had a couple of big screens set up, or flat screens, that had, Twitter streams of anyone who had those hashtags. And, people were kind of, tweeting what the hell was going on at iOS Dev Camp, and you could kind of watch this screen just click these messages as people would tweet, and it'd just be pop up on the list. I thought that
with
was pretty cool.
The project they were working for, or looking for a project, things
definitely.
Like that. It was really cool. And one of my favorite things was one of the official guys was presenting. It wasn't like a demo, but it was like a PowerPoint for like the whole, it wasn't like a project thing. Anyways, he was presenting, and his Twitter was on his Mac, and Twitter has this, or Macs have this thing called growl, like a growl, and it's like a little pop-up that comes down from the bottom right, and people were tweeting at and then his screen name, and the little growl thing would pop, and he would click it close immediately because, he was giving the presentation, and someone was like, growl FTW, and he would like click it close, and people were like, growl is so cool, or this is awesome, in front of the whole event.
That is funny. That's some funny shit. No, I'm new to Twitter too, and I'm skeptical still about that. And when I say new, I mean it's because you guys opened up a Twitter account. That's how new I am to it.
Me too. I've never had anything like that. So
it's a little bit weird to me. But people at iOS Dev Camp, they were all about this shit, and they were tweeting like a motherfucker. It was kind of crazy. It seemed like a lot of people were. I have any statistics or anything, but
so please follow us. We'll tweet stuff about the show, technology stuff that we like,
or
and
just even let us know what you think about Twitter and if you think it's cool or not, and what the hell you use it for. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, what is it good for?
I'm a little bit curious.
Yeah, we would like to know.
That's funny.
All right, guys. So thank you for listening today. Check out the website, portforwardpodcast.com, and thanks for listening.
See you have a good one.
Beep. What? Can you?
Yeah, I will.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
that
was full-on Colmack accident right there. I totally just accidentally switched. I have no freaking clue. How did that even happen? It's mind-blowing. Oh my God. What is happening?
Just type it.
NEIO. Yeah, that's the home row for Colmack. Something isn't right. That's so weird. Fine, I will just type it. What? M-A. Hold on. I haven't practiced in a few days. Yeah, there it is.
Sick.
Hold on, Colmack. That's so weird because Windows still says US, fucking Windows, I swear to God.
I know, it sucks, dude.
I switched it in Chrome on accident, that's what happened. Except for, I don't think it has to be that. Oh, God damn it.
Colmack's fucking you, dude.
Are you Colmacking right now?
On accident, yeah. Not even on purpose, I hit some,
you can't.
I chromed, crap. I accidentally chromed Colmacked.
You're having some difficulties.
That's what it's like, dude. That's what fucking Colmack.
Well, my fucking like, not having caps lock as a backspace is killing me right now. Absolutely killing me. Son of a bitch. Son of a. Oh, goddamn it.
This is the biggest clusterfuck ever.
I don't even know how to switch back to freaking QWERTY in Chrome. I have no clue.
So it's going to be don't touch my eye thing.
Don't touch my eye thing. Or how about please touch my eye thing?
Oh dear.
Or do you want to touch my eye thing? Please touch my thing.
Yeah, I'm not saying that.
Touch my
my eye thing is bigger than yours.
What the hell, dude?
My eye device is bigger than yours.
I'll show you my eye thing if you show me yours.
How very inappropriate.
Well, why don't you want to use that?
Well, cause dude, I got banned.
Oh. Why'd you get banned? That's kind of funny.
Dude, I don't know.
Yeah, I think you do.
First three,
we need to unplug Merrick's keyboard.
Oh, I'm fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
You're banned.
I didn't put all that shit up there. Someone else did. God damn
it. So you.
That was not me. This is the shit we talked about. I just copy-pasted that. Oops.
Wait, what did you just copy-paste?
Who? Look, there we go, I fixed it. Oh, there's the whistler. Now you can fucking make it work.
Interesting.
Son of a bitch.
Are you ready, Sam?
Yeah.
Do it.
That thing's like, still totally broken.
Why does that happen? It's like,
he totally sounds normal whenever he's not meaning to do it. And then whenever he means to do it, it sounds like shit.
Wait, it didn't sound normal?
No, I mean, it started out fine, but then the end was all retarded.
Really?
Yeah.
Why does it sound so sad, dude?
The fail depth was awesome.
Okay.
Dude, what is that about?
Laughing about that. Ben was working on some shit and he couldn't get it to work, so he had to like work on this other shit to get this other shit to work. And then when like the level 2 shit failed, I made a joke about how he was at fail depth level 2. And like, we were laughing our asses off about it. It was so funny.
Yeah, that was a fun time.
Dude, I hate it when that shit happens.
Totally. You get sidetracked. You get like so sidetracked and you're like, wow, I cannot believe this thing is not working, that is totally not related to this other thing that's not working. I'm so pissed right now.
We
should just talk about whatever. I think we should avoid like following that thing, the list of show notes.
I put the show notes here for a reason, and you don't follow them, and I want to kill you.
I'm just going to, whenever there's a pause in conversation, I'm just going to scroll to the bottom and read something. So, quantum cryptography, guys. Yes, no, maybe.